Be sure to surprise him. He's your friend and he's there to help.
Drop him in the rocks. I have no tails. He knows how much sweat he is to get over here.
Good morning. And welcome into the show of the Congo. Hope you're having a fantastic day, and all is well with you and yours. Thank you so much for listening in. I appreciate you being there. It is a bizarre weekend, and hopefully, as you have been paying attention to this weekend, you have noticed that that our political representatives are a little on the nutty side. We'll be looking into that today, and maybe you caught something that actually happened that was funny on Saturday Night Live, which honestly, between you and me, is just huge. That never, ever happens. But it looks like it happened over the weekend on Saturday Night Live. So go figure. They were actually funny. How did that happen? Well, we'll look into that coming up in a few minutes. Anyway, first off, it is The Daily Perspective. I'm your sometimes humble host, Mark Congleton. Good to be here with you. Hopefully you're having a good day so far, wherever and whenever that day may be occurring, whether you are on Facebook Live as we gather together for this daily edition of lunacy, or possibly you are listening via podcast sometime at a later time. Either way, I appreciate you being there. Thanks for being there. Thanks for being part of the family. Thanks for spreading the word and growing this little family each and every day. I'm sorry, I'm slightly distracted because one of the things that I use, the word processor that I use, and I wear them in my boots, and it's like, no, it doesn't work on me. It's just, no. Fortunately, I've made a mistake in the show. I've got rebellious programming on my hands this morning, so you can deal with that. Anyway, what's this today? Let's see, I mentioned Saturday Night Live. We'll deal with that in a few minutes. Also, the Democrats are accusing Attorney General Barr essentially of doing exactly what Eric Holder and Loretta Lynch did for President Obama. And they're making these accusations that he has broken the law. But back when Eric Holder and Loretta Lynch were in the same positions, no, not a big deal. Nothing to worry about here. Move along. Nothing to see here. Move along, people. Nancy Pelosi has told the New York Times she's worried that Trump will not respect the election results coming up in 2020. This is the same song they were singing back in 2016. Remember? But, you know, when you don't have any new material, you just keep singing the same song. And there's creepy Uncle Joe. Yeah, I'm sorry, but we're going to have to look at him again a little bit later this morning. So there's just, as I look at things over the weekend prepping for a Monday, I see stories and just so many come up about Joe Biden. And I think rightfully so, because Joe Biden is known for his time as being a vice president with Barack Hussein Obama. He has name recognition, but a lot of people don't really know much about Joe Biden, except that he was the vice president for 8 years. They don't put two and two together. They don't think about the fact that they never really saw him in public very much. They just know, hey, he was the vice president. That's how it goes. You know, your VP, you go and you open public restrooms, you cut ribbons, you preside over certain functions of the Congress. Yeah, it's not really a front and center kind of job. Not something you're in the spotlight doing a lot. Well, yeah, but in Biden's case, as we're seeing right now, as he is campaigning, you didn't see much of him because they kept him under wraps. Because every time he got in front of a microphone or a camera, he did something embarrassing. So we're seeing more of that. And that's why we're going to be talking about him a bit today. Because there is more to creepy Uncle Joe than meets the eye. Even the limited amount of exposure he's getting right now. The man's on the campaign trail. His people won't let him talk to the press. He's got to stay on script. You remember what I said the day he announced? I said that there would be a couple of people whose jobs were, one, to keep him on script, and two, to make sure he had zero contact beyond handshakes with anybody. Yeah, well, they're doing their job. They're keeping him on script by keeping him out of touch with people, unless he's behind a mic at the podium. And we're not hearing about any odd massage issues, are we? No, we're not. Okay, back to square one. I think we should start off with a laugh today, because Saturday Night Live over the weekend brought back the caricature that they do of Senator Elizabeth Warren. Kate McKinnon plays the part, and she basically just laid right into the Democrats who are running for president.
Do you think that your proposals are going to help set you apart from some of these other candidates?
Yeah, I sure do hope so. Look, I mean, what a freaking clown car I found myself in. I'm over here working locked to give you free college, but oh, look in there. Beto O'Dork did parkour in a Starbucks. Wow. Whoops, I just figured out universal pre-K, but what's that over there? Mayor Pete Buttigieg Judy Jukes playing piano and speaking fluent Klingon. Look, I know as a Democrat I'm not supposed to say this, but speak English. Frick. We're going to have a fight.
No. Tom, that said. Now, what about that Joe Biden? Is that officially right?
Oh, yeah. Great. Everybody make room for good old Joe, the Amtrak masseuse. What a hero he is. Look, if I lose, I'm still going to be fighting the U.S. Senate. And where will old Joe be? Sitting on the beach and talking about saltwater tabs near.
Not fight. Right. Senator, you were also the first candidate to call for Trump's impeachment.
Oh, well, look, Colin, listen, no one's above the law, right? Impeachment is this guy's middle name, that jackass. But all the other...
Okay, well, that's over. She did a very effective job digging into the other candidate's clown car. And I've been calling it a clown car for quite a while now. Oh, my gosh. I just love it. I'm over here working round the clock to give you free college, but oh, looky there. Beto O'Dork did parkour in a Starbucks. Mayor Pete Buttigieg Judy Jutes is playing piano and speaking fluent Klingon. Oh, my gosh. What a funny thing. And it's good to know that that people are actually taking comedic shots at what's going on, because to be honest with you, I think they were really afraid to for 8 years. We lived in an environment of fear for 8 years as leftist intolerance grew and grew and grew. Comedians have said, prominent, popular, successful comedians have said they no longer want to play college campuses because of the political correctness, the intolerance of political correctness on college campuses. We have seen this said time and time and time again. And it truly is a sad thing, because if we can't poke fun at ourselves, then it shows that we have a level of intolerance that is all too. And on the left, there is that level of intolerance. Anything that doesn't conform must be squashed. Anything that doesn't align itself with the proper definitions must be destroyed. And to see that someone is appearing and lampooning a candidate and then lampooning other candidates in the process is refreshing. Now, she wrapped that entire piece up talking about impeachment and what a jackass Trump was and the like. And of course it had to go that direction because they're liberals and they all hate Donald Trump. But it's refreshing to see that humor is actually coming back and people are seeing what a crazy field of politicians we have. And it is crazy. The intolerance of the left is something that you and I need to be keenly aware of. And we need to remember that when they disapprove of something, it's because it doesn't align with their particular set of, with their worldview. I almost said set of values. It's really hard to establish or attach values to liberalism, because the ethics are just non-existent. Whatever it takes to get to the goal is what is proper and what is accepted. But we're watching the left scrub sanity from the public square. You can't be honest. You can't be, you can't make an observation of truth without being accused of being hate-filled, a racist, anti-Semitic. You hate anyone who looks different than you. We've all heard the argument about Donald Trump hating people with brown skin. All of these lies, and yes, they are lies, because they're forcing people to conform to their worldview. So, yeah, it's refreshing to see Saturday Night Live poke fun at Elizabeth Warren and the rest of the candidates, because, doggone it, we should be poking fun at them. And once we're through laughing, we should sit back and take a really close look at exactly how wrong they are about what they're preaching to the American people. Because what they are promising looks good to the uninitiated. What they are telling us they want to do, like Elizabeth Warren, making college free for everybody, it sounds good. Wouldn't you love for your kid to get a free college education? Yeah, we all would. We would all love for our kid to get a free college education. But the problem is, nothing is truly free. Somebody has to pay for it. Government got involved in college education, in the funding process, and because government got involved, there was a perception of a bottomless supply of funding, and so college pricing, the education pricing, skyrocketed. What they want to make it free for everybody, which means your taxes are going to jump drastically. So you're still paying for it, even if you don't send a kid to college. Even if you determine that what is best for your kid is to pursue welding and then start earning a really good living and then use that living to pay to learn what they really want to do with their lives. And that's something that I've recommended for quite some time, is that college is not for everyone. Everyone is not cut out for it. So, and everyone is not going to benefit from what's happening on the college scene today, especially because liberalism has infected upper education, and your kids are being taught things that are just completely untrue. If you don't believe me, just spend a little time on YouTube and look around at what they believe. So a college education is not necessarily right for everyone. Yeah, I get it. Parents want to be proud of their kids and they want to send them to college, especially parents who didn't get the opportunity themselves. But you need to look closer. You need to look deeper. You need to look beyond the privilege and the pride and realize that colleges are indoctrination centers now. They're not necessarily places of higher learning. They're places of alternative learning. So we have professors brainwashing students into believing, for example, that the Electoral College is a bad thing for America. So even if it's free, it's not right. And it occurs to me that free really is about what it's worth. Because if you're going to send your kids off to be taught things that just aren't true, they'll never be able to cope with the realities of life. And if they can't cope with the realities of life, then their education is worthless. So Elizabeth Warren can, and those like her, can promise a free education. But the free education is really worth nothing. More when we come back from the break on The Daily Perspective. You are listening to The Daily Perspective. Hi there. Mark Congleton here. You're there. Princess Kimber, the wonder dog, is over there. Everything is where it's supposed to be. Let's leave it that way, okay? I'm easily confused on Monday mornings. Over the weekend, on social media, I posted a link to an article, which I got a couple of responses to. But I think it's an extremely important article, and I want you to go find it. I want you to read it. I want you to see what it has to say. It's on humanevents.com. The article is called Checkmate. I will put it in the show notes today. Actually, it's already in the show notes. I've got it listed. Because I want you to go read this article. It's an extremely important look at how we got where we are right now with the Office of Attorney General. How William Barr came to be in that position. Where he came from, what he was doing, why he was approached. The reasoning, the rationale, everything behind it, it's all there. And why he is doing things the way he's doing things. It's an extremely important article, and I really, really, really want you to read it. If you read it, congratulations, you already know what I'm talking about. It's an amazing insight. It really is. And if you haven't read it, you need to. You really, really need to. Go look back through the posts from the weekend on the Mark and Mac Show and the Daily Perspective on Facebook, and you will find the link to Checkmate. It's not that far back because I really wasn't all that active over the weekend on social media, but this was important, and I wanted to get that to you. Please read that today. That's your homework, because it will give you some insight that will help you understand why we are where we are and why the Democrats are fighting so hard to discredit William Barr. For example, Nancy Pelosi right now is telling people that he lied to Congress, that he's broken the law. And there's a reason she's saying so, because they need to be able to accuse him of perjury, like they have others attached to the Mueller investigation. That is why they wanted him to come and appear before Congress and be interrogated by staff lawyers rather than the congressmen, congresswomen, the congresspeople themselves. They wanted to set him up in a perjury trap so that they could discredit him and charge him with breaking the law, threaten him with prison time. That's what they wanted to do. Well, the Democrats are guilty, and we know they are. We know they're guilty, and we know what they're guilty of by what they accuse Republicans of doing. This is something that we've been saying for quite some time, that if the Democrats are accusing Republicans of something, you can pretty much count on it being what they're up to. We've heard that happen, or some variation of it, before. Yet every time it happens, it's no less shocking that they think they can actually get away with it. Right now, this axiom is playing itself out, proving itself to be true once again with their targeting of Attorney General William Barr. Congressional Democrats are clearly aware that the American people do not favor impeachment of President Trump. Even a CNN poll shows that 59% of the public oppose impeachment. That's a left-leaning poll. While impeaching Trump is for the moment off the table because there are no legitimate grounds to do so, the Democrat Party has set its sights on Attorney General Barr. When Democrats didn't like the findings of the Mueller report, they accused Barr of being a partisan who was hand-picked by Trump to protect him. They now claim Barr's four-page memo summarizing the conclusions of the report was misleading, which it wasn't, and that Barr perjured himself during previous testimony to Congress, which he did not. Naturally, partisan Democrats are now calling for his impeachment, And presidential candidates are also fundraising by attacking him as well. As absurd as the claims are that Barr is acting like Trump's personal lawyer to protect him, it's difficult not to see that Democrats are making it their business to accuse William Barr of being everything Eric Holder and Loretta Lynch were for Barack Obama. Neither Holder nor Lynch should have been confirmed as U.S. Attorney General in the first place, given their radical pasts. In 1970, Eric Holder was the leader of a black separatist group at Columbia University called the Student Afro-American Society, the SAAS. As part of that group, Holder participated in a five-day armed takeover of an abandoned ROTC office on the Columbia University campus. He was also a hardcore left-wing partisan who disparaged conservatives and, as Deputy Attorney General under Bill Clinton, played a major role in the pardoning of Weather Underground terrorists. Holder's radical past set the tone for his tenure at the Justice Department, which was defined by politics, not blind justice. One of the earliest scandals of the Obama presidency was Holder's decision, and you're going to remember this, Holder's decision not to prosecute new Black Panther Party members over voter intimidation during the 2008 election. Do you remember that? Do you remember these new Black Panther Party members standing in front of the polling place, dressed in black, in leather, with baseball bats and clubs? Do you remember that? I don't care who you are or what you believe, you know that's intimidation. And yet, he refused to prosecute. Holder was also behind the stonewalling of many investigations, which prompted 47 inspectors general to write a letter to Congress informing them of the systemic obstruction. That's 47 out of 73. 73 total. 47 of them wrote a letter to Congress about systemic obstruction. Holder clearly saw his job as Obama's prosecutor, protector that is, and refused to cooperate with congressional investigations, resulting in his being held in contempt of Congress. Holder also funneled billions of dollars to left-wing groups in a huge slush fund scheme. Holder's politicization, Holder's politicization of the Department of Justice is undeniable, unless you're a delusional leftist. During a 2000 interview on the Tom Joyner, a 2013 interview on the Tom Joyner show, it's a radio show, he dismissed a question about him possibly leaving the administration, quote, "I'm still enjoying what I'm doing. There's still work to be done. I'm still the president's wingman. So I'm there with my boy. I'm still the president's wingman. So I'm there with my boy." The president's attorney general. Holder was clearly proud of his unwavering allegiance to Obama, not the rule of law. And he was not afraid to say so. Do you recall Democrats accusing Holder of being a partisan handpicked by Obama to protect him? Nah, you won't, because they never did. When it finally came time to pick Holder's replacement, Obama picked Loretta Lynch, who'd also had a long record of radical and racialist views, and it was clear from her testimony that she was going to continue to lead the DOJ the way Eric Holder did. And she came through. As Attorney General, Lynch considered using the Department of Justice to prosecute climate change deniers and sued North Carolina over HB2, that was the so-called bathroom bill. Of course, her partisan accolades really shined in her role protecting Hillary Clinton, Obama's heir apparent to the presidency. According to former FBI Director James Comey, A.G. Lynch directed him to call the investigation of Hillary Clinton's private email server a matter. Remember that? Let's refer to it as a matter, not an investigation, in order to match the Clintons' campaign language. According to the emails from the Democrat operative that were leaked to the New York Times, Lynch, quote, would keep the Clinton investigation from going too far. And then there's the whole spying on Trump thing. After 8 years of Obama's cronies politicizing and weaponizing the Justice Department, it took Attorney General Jeff Sessions to depoliticize the Justice Department. Similarly, Attorney General Barr has shown more transparency than the Obama Justice Department ever did. But Democrats aren't happy that the Mueller report didn't tell them what they wanted. Because of this, they're targeting Barr in order to undermine President Trump. And they're doing so by accusing Barr of being everything Eric Holder and Loretta Lynch were for Barack Obama. So you see, Eric Holder and Loretta Lynch were deeply corrupt. They abused the office of Attorney General on behalf of a deeply corrupt president. But Attorney General William Barr, compared to those two, is a Boy Scout. He's done everything by the book. He's done everything according to the law. He has been transparent. He didn't redact anything from the Mueller report except what was legally required to be redacted because of ongoing investigations. And those ongoing investigations, they're making the Democrats very, very nervous. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Hi there. Thanks for being along today. Thanks for scribing. Can you tell it's Monday? Yikes. I'm having a lot of trouble getting back into the swing today. Oh my goodness. And I know you may be too. It's good to have you along today. Thank you so much for being there and subscribing to the Daily Perspective newsletter, the daily dump, so to speak, of the show notes that comes direct to your inbox. It's all the links to the stories that get into the show and the ones I didn't have time for, too. So please subscribe today if you're not already subscribed, and you'll get little tidbits like the Florida legislature. They have a brilliant new piece of legislation, which is pretty much going to eliminate sanctuary cities in the state of Florida. We may get around to talking to that, but I doubt we will. Loony Tom Arnold, you know, he used to be married to Roseanne Barr. His wife is dumping him because he's so obsessed with Donald Trump. That's one of the reasons. The other reason being that he's addicted to prescription medications, but he thinks about and talks about is Trump, and he is angry. There was actually a story that popped up over the weekend about him getting into it on a sidewalk with some people, just screaming at them. And I was going to bring you the story today, but and the audio that goes with it, but honestly, the audio would have been mostly bleeps. So I decided, no, he's nuts. Well, that's in the mix as well, stuff I won't get to. And other things as well. There's a terrific article from John Stossel about inequality, and it's something that that you really need to look at. And of course, that article I referred to earlier called Checkmate, about how William Barr became the Attorney General and the reasoning, the rationale behind it. And after reading that article, I was pretty much convinced that everything that happened with Jeff Sessions, as much as people fussed about him recusing himself and Trump being livid with him for doing so and everything he's done, I am convinced now that was all just theater. That for the most part, it was all planned. That there was a reason for all of it happening. And it ultimately played out at the midterm in Sessions moving on and then bringing in Attorney General, who is now Attorney General William Barr, because Barr was the brilliant legal mind who could address the way that Robert Mueller was framing the obstruction argument in the Mueller report. And when you read this article, you'll understand why. It gets into the details that we really. It's very hard to get into in an environment like this, because honestly, it's like listening to somebody talk about the technicalities of baseball. Certain people are going to be thrilled with it and hang on every word, but the vast majority of people are going to go, wow, what else is on? So we're just not going to go there. Go read the article, educate yourself, inform yourself. It's called Checkmate. It's on humanevents.com, and it will be in today's show notes. So get signed up today. Go to markcongleton.com, fill out the form on the right side of the front page, answer yes to the email you received to confirm that you really do want to receive it, and you'll start getting the newsletter. If you do it before the end of the live show today, you'll get it today. But if you're listening via podcast and still haven't made up your mind, do it, and you'll probably get it tomorrow. If you're listening to today's show today. Okay, I just confused myself. All right, back to the matters at hand. Nancy Pelosi has told the New York Times that she is worried about Trump respecting election results. Seriously, she did say that. The story is coming to us from The Blaze. If you spent the last week watching the Democrats on Capitol Hill still arguing about the results of the 2016 election or even threatening to lock up the Attorney General of the United States over it, then you might find it a bit of a surprise that they're worried about people not respecting the results of an election. But that is what happened when Speaker Nancy Pelosi spoke to the New York Times. She said she was worried Trump may not respect the results of the 2020 election. If this sounds familiar, by the way, it should, because they made this same argument when Trump said, when he actually said he might have doubts about the authenticity of the election if Hillary Clinton won. Of course, you know, I've said this before. I believe they stacked the deck in their favor in every way they thought they could. And they were so confident that Hillary didn't even go campaign in some places. Ah, that's a lock. No need to go there. They were so sure that they had rigged everything so flawlessly that everyone was completely shocked when Donald Trump won. Well, Democrats in several states, you may also recall, are trying to bypass the system we use for electing a president by signing on to an agreement to undermine their own state's voters and cast their electoral ballots for whomever wins the so-called national popular vote. That's because they think that Hillary Clinton was robbed by the Electoral College, or James Comey, or WikiLeaks, or John Stewart, or whoever. So you may be surprised that those Democrats worry about people not respecting the results of an election. But that is what happened when the Speaker of the House, Representative Nancy Pelosi, spoke to the New York Times. She is worried that he might not respect the result. It may be the case that watching Democrats and commentators on cable news actually refuse to say that Trump is the legitimately elected president, as we come up on 3 years since he was democratically elected, has put you in a spot where you'd be surprised to hear that Democrats are deeply concerned about people respecting the results of an election. But that is what happened when Pelosi spoke to the New York Times. Seriously. Quote, "We have to inoculate against that. We have to be prepared for that," Ms. Pelosi said during an interview at the Capitol on Wednesday as she discussed her concern that Mr. Trump would not give up power voluntarily if he lost re-election by a slim margin next year. Pelosi, to be fair, is in a tough spot with her party. The primary candidates have been playing chicken with outright Marxism and are in a nobody wins contest to outrageous each other. From promising free college, health care, housing, and more to vowing votes for incarcerated terrorists, the 2020 field is driving away from the American electorate so fast, they'll never be able to make up the carbon footprint. But Democrat leadership is aware of the precariousness of the party's position. And the mental picture I just got was from Thelma and Louise. These people in the clown car have put their foot to the accelerator pedal, and they're going off the cliff. But doggone it, they're right. Moving on. The public is practically numb to Trump's countless outrages, flaws, and dangers. Old news. Democrat. Outrages, flaws, and dangers are the new news, fresh and exciting. Running to the center after a primary is the move both parties make each cycle, or at least they did before Trump. If the Democrats don't run at least somewhat back to the center, they can risk losing the ballgame, and that's the argument Pelosi made. To the New York Times, she explained her plan for getting rid of Trump at the ballot box, which the paper summarized as, quote, "Do not get dragged into a protracted impeachment bid that will ultimately get crushed in the Republican-controlled Senate, and do not risk alienating the moderate voters who flocked to the party in 2018 by drifting too far to the left." And that's absolutely true. Impeachment, they realize, they recognize the fact that the Senate is controlled by the Republicans. Impeachment has to go through the Senate and pass the Senate, and they realize it won't. They can make a big stink. They can try to embarrass Trump. Can you imagine trying to embarrass Donald Trump? Can you think of anything that could embarrass Donald Trump? Obviously, he doesn't think there's anything that could embarrass him. So they realize that this attempt will result in exactly what happened to the Republicans back when they impeached Clinton. Because when they impeached Bill Clinton, Republicans lost seats. Because the people, it left a bad taste in the people's mouth. They didn't like all of this that was going on. And so they moved towards the Democrats. And the Democrats, in the leadership at least, remember history. And they realize what's going to happen if they keep pushing this direction. Now, Pelosi can't just sell that to the frothing resistance base. In the new Democrat Party, electability is a dirty, probably racist word, even when it's applied to policy preferences. Pelosi needs some way to convince the rabid left that running to the center isn't a compromise, it's another assault against Trump. The solution, obviously, is to sell them on the idea that Trump won't respect the election result if it's too close, even if the argument isn't that convincing. The Times referenced the 2018 midterms and how Pelosi worried then about the results. Quote, "If we win by 4 seats, by 1,000 votes each, he's not going to respect the election," said Ms. Pelosi, recalling her thinking in the run-up to the 2018 elections. "He would poison the public mind. He would challenge each of the races. He would say, you can't seat these people," she added. "We had to win. Imagine if we hadn't won." Oh, don't even imagine. So she's making the argument that they have to win by a substantial margin in order to have legitimacy. I'm saying that he has to win by a substantial margin to overcome the shenanigans. I said so in 2016, that he had to win by a substantial margin in order to overcome the fraud. He did, and they're still trying to steal the election. It just keeps going on. They can't win on policy and principle. They have to win by deception. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Hi there. I'm glad you're along today. A big howdy to those of you on Facebook Live. Thanks for being there. And hello to those of you listening via podcast. You can subscribe to the show via podcast through iTunes or through the Google Podcast app. Either way, it works. And usually it's available before 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock Central every weekday morning. Sometimes, like Friday, everything looks like it's supposed to, and I go back at some point later in the day, or possibly over the weekend, like I did this time, and realize, wait a minute, it's the podcast didn't post. And so, podcast subscribers, my apologies. I thought because everything looked like it was supposed to. I mean, I upload the podcast feed or the audio file. I do everything I'm supposed to do. I go to the podcast hosting site. It's there. Everything is, I put the link up. I can click on that link and go to the link in a browser and listen to the podcast. It's all there. And then it doesn't show up in iTunes or in Google Podcast. It's just boom, not there. It's just really strange. But I try to fix that as soon as, and that does happen from time to time. Oddly enough, it's happening more frequently now than it used to, and it's really starting to rub me the wrong way, because the way this all works should be very simple, very straightforward, very seamless, and for some reason, something just ain't happening right, and it's rubbing me the wrong way. It's making me mad. Well, I may have to clean my gun. Now, hopefully that won't happen today. Michelle Malkin, you know Michelle Malkin, most likely. She's written an article that's on dailywire.com about Joe Biden. And not just Joe, but also another member of his family. And this is a story that's starting to get some traction, starting to get some attention. And the way she phrases this, I think, is very important. The title of the article is "The Bidens. They're still not like us." Now that creepy Joe Biden thinks he has to put to rest all the cringy questions, he thinks he has put to rest all the cringy questions about his grabby hands, he has reverted to one of his old-time shticks. Middle-class Joe. Champion of the masses. Hero of the hoi polloi. A 6-term U.S. senator and 2-term vice president, which equates to 44 back-slapping, log-rolling, favor-trading years in Washington. This decrepit beltway swamp dweller wants flyover Americans to believe he's really just like you and me. Reality-based reporting and informed commentary since the rollout of Biden 2020 has rightly focused on the Biden family's ideological and interest-conflicted dalliances with the Ukraine and China. But let's first start with a reminder about elite Biden privilege closer to home. Robert Hunter Biden, youngest son of the Veep creep, secured a prestigious direct commission to the U.S. Naval Reserves in 2012 as a public affairs officer. The program recruits civilians without prior military service who have special skills that are critical to sustaining military operations. Biden the Younger's primary qualification for the cushy part-time job was his last name. The power of nepotism came in handy when Biden's spawn was forced to seek not one, but 2 waivers to nail down the gig. Ordinary applicants have to meet age restrictions. Under 40 at the time he sought the position, now 42. He was 43. Then, hapless Hunter needed a second waiver to get a pass for prior cocaine use. Granted. Only 6 public affairs officers received such direct appointments from the Navy Reserves that year. Amazing, isn't it, that there wasn't a single other applicant in America, population 327 million, with a clean drug history and proper age eligibility to take that slot. But for all that string-pulling effort, Hunter Biden barely served a year after testing positive for, wait for it, cocaine. During a random drug test, he was discharged quietly in February of 2014. The hush-hush deal, undisclosed until a whistleblower told the Wall Street Journal 8 months later, was yet another perk of Biden patronage. So was his immunity from any investigation or review of his law license by the Connecticut Bar. And so, too, was his quick career bounce back. A month after his humiliating discharge from our military, Biden's coke-abusing party boy was appointed to the board of directors of Ukraine's largest private gas producer, Burisma Holdings, owned by a powerful Russian government sympathizer who had fled to Russia that year. It's also the same company a top Ukrainian prosecutor was investigating for corruption before he was fired at the behest of Papa Biden, according to Joe himself, who bragged about threatening to withhold $1 billion in loan guarantees to Ukraine during a Council of Foreign Relations speech in 2018. After reporting earlier this month that Ukrainian officials are still probing the shady company and its dealings with baby Biden, The Hill's John Solomon proposed pointed questions for the Democratic presidential frontrunner. Quote, was it appropriate for you, for your son and his firm to cash in on Ukraine while you served as point man for Ukraine policy? What work was performed for the money Hunter Biden's firm received? Did you know about the Burisma probe, and should you have recused yourself? Similar queries apply to Hunter Biden's other position at investment firm Rosemont Seneca, which snagged a $1 billion deal in 2013 with the commie-run Bank of China, first reported by investigative author Peter Schweitzer just days after Daddy B had met with China's President Xi Jinping. As cataloged in the book Culture of Corruption more than a decade ago, name trading and favor extracting are the story of Hunter the Privileged and Joe the Enabler's lives. Hunter's first job, acquired after Joe Biden won his 1996 Senate re-election bid in Delaware, was with MBNA, the credit card conglomerate, and top campaign finance donor to then-Senator Biden. The elder Biden secured his custom-built multi-million-dollar house in Delaware's ritziest chateau country with the help of a leading MBNA corporate executive. Biden went on to carry legislative water for MBNA in the Senate for years. Hunter became a founding partner in the lobbying firm of Oldecker, Biden, and Belair in 2002. William Oldecker was Papa Biden's former fundraiser, campaign treasurer, and general counsel. Under Oldecker's tutelage, Hunter lobbied for drug companies, universities, and other deep-pocketed clients to the tune of nearly $4 million billed to the company by 2007. Hunter held a top position at Paradigm Global Advisors, a hedge fund holding company founded with the Veep's brother, James, and marketed by convicted finance fraudster Alan Stanford. Hunter oversaw $500 million of client money invested in hedge funds while remaining a D.C. lobbyist. The ill-fated venture went bust amid nasty fraud lawsuits. Hunter also served on the board of directors of taxpayer-subsidized Amtrak, for which his father secured a $53 billion high-speed train initiative. You know, the average guy, the average mom or dad, is not going to find their kids jobs like these. This all comes from incredible political privilege and corruption. The Biden family, Joe and his son, not just creepy, but they're also crooked. And they are most definitely not like us, average people. They're playing a high-dollar game at a table you can't afford to sit at. And they're cashing in on Joe Biden's position. And creepy Uncle Joe has been doing this for 44, 45 years now. He is part of the Washington establishment. He is part of the 1%. He is part of the problem and cannot offer solutions. He is deeply corrupt. His roots go very deep. And he has no business sitting in the Oval Office. None whatsoever. And that's it for this Monday edition of the Daily Perspective. Have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow. God bless. Bye-bye.